Welcome to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm Barbara Jackson, your host, and I'm joined in the studio by our co-host, Lee Miller.
And we're your career doctors.
Your Career Doctors is all about taking control of your career.
It's about providing you with the information, contacts, skills, and tools you need, both on our show and on our website, yourcareerdoctors.com.
It's also about providing access to experts. Today we're going to be talking with Julie Jansen. Lee, why don't you introduce Julie?
Julie Jansen is a career coach and the author of the brand new book, You Want Me to Work With Who? Welcome, Julie.
Thanks, Lee. I'm glad to be here.
So are there really more difficult people in the workforce today, or does it just seem like it?
I think it seems like it, although I do think that the pressure of the workplace has brought out the worst in people.
So why are there so many difficult people in the workplace?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, technology, as wonderful as it is on one level, it just has created a lot of stress and pressure, you know, immediacy of communication, 24/7, so people don't have any time to reflect or think or relax anymore. And that's pretty rough. I think people are shoved on top of each other in cubicles now, much more so. And, I just think that work is hard.
Yes, I can tell you, work is hard. I've spent 20 years in the corporate world, and I don't think it's going to get any easier.
No, I agree with you. It isn't.
So why did you write You Want Me to Work With Who?
Well, I truthfully wanted to share my keys with people, the 11 keys, which I know you'll ask me about. But I wanted to think about, well, what's the big issue that people face at work? And it clearly, over and over again, from what I heard from people I train and coach, was dealing with other people, especially the tough ones.
And that's what makes you successful in the job, right?
Well, I mean, I think that you can't do anything anymore without other people, and you have to be able to collaborate and adapt to them and get along with them and all of the above.
Okay. Well, you talked about your 11 rules. Those are the basic rules for dealing with each of these different types of what you would call difficult people.
Well, they're actually what I call keys, because I wanted to kind of have a catchy word to describe them, and they're almost all one word and very simple, and they're more like qualities that you kind of look to develop in yourself and qualities that you try to help other people develop.
Okay. Now, in your book, you kind of categorize several different types of difficult people. What are some of those difficult people?
I clumped a lot into five categories. I mean, there's the poor communicator, which is the person doesn't listen. They're an emotional communicator. They're complaining all the time. They're not succinct or focused. Could be any of those. And then the person who is disrespectful, you know, the bully, the person who steals your food out of the refrigerator, the person who lies or takes other people's ideas. There's more and more of those I've noticed. In the workplace.
It seems to, doesn't it?
I guess it does.
The world is tough.
And then there's the rigid person, that person who just isn't flexible, can't adapt or change. This is always the way I've done it, you know, that kind of a person.
And that's particularly hard in today's world to have to deal with those people because the world's changing so fast.
Well, it just constantly changes, so I'm not really sure how people like that honestly survive. My favorite, Lee, is the no common sense wheel reinventor. I put a lot of people in that category, just someone who doesn't listen to their gut, someone who isn't curious about different approaches, can't solve problems, doesn't execute, you know, those kinds of things.
God, that could be a real problem. You know, there are a lot of those out there, aren't there?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not to say that everybody has all of those things, but it's not about intelligence. It's just about taking smart approaches. And then my last and fifth category is the dysfunctional decision maker. Poor decisions, doesn't make decisions at all, or makes decisions and changes his or her mind.
Well, are there different rules or keys for dealing with each of these types of people, or are they all the same keys?
Well, I mean, I think all the keys apply to every single one of those people. But some are going to certainly be more relevant than others, you know. If someone isn't making decisions, for example, let's take an easier one, it may well be that they just suffer from low confidence, and confidence is one of the keys.
Okay. So let's talk about your 11 keys. Which is the most important?
That's the most popular question I get asked by everybody in the media, and I would say that they're obviously all very important, but without self-awareness, which happens to be the 11th key, and, you know, they're alphabetized, which is why it's 11, I don't think you can really realize how you impact others with your behavior or change if you don't have self-awareness.
Okay, and of course, changing is critical if you're going to improve, right?
Yeah, of course, and it's also it's just critical in, as you said earlier, it's critical in the workplace to constantly be improving, changing, thinking of new approaches.
Okay, let's talk about some of the other keys. What are some of the other keys? That,
well,
that you
there's the confidence I mentioned. There's curiosity. One of my favorites is humor, of course. And I think we're all taking ourselves much too seriously at work. And that we need to laugh a little bit more and remember, you know, that, that work can be fun too. I would say empathy is pretty big, especially when you're dealing with so many different kinds of people. You want to try to be empathetic towards others, even if you can't completely relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
Being flexible. My intelligence key is someone who communicates well, someone who solves problems well, someone who actually implements.
Well, can somebody improve their intelligence?
Well, it's not IQ in my book. It's really those elements of intelligence that I've pinpointed. You know, executing, possessing a larger perspective, problem solving. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything in this book that can't be learned. Some are harder than others. And then their optimism goes without saying. We know why that's good. And perseverance is very important. And then of course the infamous respect.
Great. Those are really great keys. So, and you
Thank
have 11
you.
Of them there. So let's talk about how you use those. Let's say you're faced with someone in the workplace who's disorganized or just downright lazy, and I need to get something from that person. What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, that the root of it, if someone is disorganized or lazy, certainly they're lacking perseverance. So you might just flip to that particular chapter. And that's the thing about this book is you don't have to read every single chapter. You know, certain keys are relevant for certain people.
That's great,
and
though,
just kind of figure out
world,
why.
Right?
You know, why are they lazy? Why are they disorganized? They just don't carry things through? They don't take initiative? You know, is it a decisiveness thing? I mean, what is it? And you can use the keys to sort of figure that out. And it kind of goes through that in the book, which keys are relevant to which kind of behavior.
Okay, so you have to identify what the problem is, and
yeah.
The book helps you figure out, you know, which are you? You have too much or too little of one of these qualities.
Yeah, and also what it does is kind of helps you look at yourself as far as the keys are concerned, and see how your lack of, or to your point, having too much of a key is impacting someone else's behavior because it's all connected. You know, it takes two.
Yeah,
really?
I think that's a key point in the book that you mentioned is that it's two-sided. I mean, it's your end of these qualities. It's both sides that are important.
Because that's what relationships are. You know, it's always about both people. It's not, and a lot of these books that are written to handle difficult people are like, well, here are the seven tips for dealing with a bully. And I have a lot of those in the book as well, but I don't think it's that black and white because I think it's chemistry.
So you figure out why the person's disorganized, and then what?
Well, then there's I have lots of scripts in the book that
oh, that's
you can
helpful.
Yeah, sit down and okay, so you're the way you're going to communicate with your boss who's disorganized versus a peer who's on your team versus a direct report versus a client, you know, it's going to be different. You're going to be a little more careful with someone who's more senior. So it actually writes. I have lots of little scripts that tell you what you can say to someone and how you can approach them. And there's assessments so that depending on who the person is, they can take some of the assessments or you can make some recommendations about some of the things that they can do to strengthen the key or, you know, tone it down.
Very good. That's got to be useful. I love when you have scripts in a book because that helps people figure out exactly how they ought to say things, and that's always very difficult until you've done it, right?
Yeah, it's surprising, and you're right, how people don't really know how to word things, and it just makes them really uncomfortable, so they just avoid.
Well, how about if you're dealing with someone, and I'm sure been there, just someone who's just downright mean?
Yeah. When someone is mean, typically they're actually being rather bravado and they may have low confidence.
Really?
They certainly don't have empathy. Yeah, in many cases, or they're just not very self-aware, obviously. Typically they may not have a sense of humor. They may not be an optimistic person. So those things come quickly to mind when someone's mean. And it's really about just drawing everything back to business and the goals that you have to achieve together. And telling someone that it's just unacceptable to treat you with disrespect.
So once you figure out what's motivating them, you can then use the techniques to, you know, kind of bring them back to just stay focused on the business issue at hand?
Exactly, exactly.
Good. Now, what if either the mean person or the difficult person is your boss? The same rules apply as when you're dealing with college.
The same rules do apply. It's scarier, no question. But there's no reason that any human being should allow someone else to treat them with disrespect, even if they're the person who might sign their paycheck. So it's really just getting the courage up, scripting it out, kind of figuring out what the person's motive is. Is the person just mean to you, or are they mean to everybody? Documenting it, sitting down and having a formal discussion, modeling how you'd like them to communicate with you in the future, seeing what is aggravating the person, and, you know, continuing to have those conversations. And if it doesn't change, then you go to the person's boss or HR.
So is there any kind of general advice you'd give someone about managing up, regardless of whether their boss is difficult or not?
Yeah, I mean, it's that people above you don't tend to get that much specific feedback. And in many cases, depending on what the issue is, people might even welcome it or listen to it more than you might imagine. So I think it's just being very careful about scripting out what you're going to say, treating people with respect, focusing on business, but, you know, giving yourself permission to have conversations with people that are above you.
Okay, that's a good prescription. One that kind of jumps out at me is when you have to deal with somebody who is low on the intelligence side, you know, any advice for dealing with that? Because that's very frustrating for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, my key is not about IQ. So you know you can't change anybody's IQ. It's what they're born with, basically. So, you know, that's a tough one if they really do have a low IQ. But,
especially if they're your boss.
Exactly. But if it's, you know, someone who just can't solve problems or someone who just never makes things happen, those things can be learned, as I said. And so it's really, there's lots of little models in the book for helping someone to learn how to solve problems more effectively and for, you know, making things happen, to creating project charts and going from start to finish and those kinds of things.
Now, Julie, what if after reading your book you recognize yourself as one of those difficult people?
Well, we all are. We all have things. I mean, part of my intelligence key is communication. If I were to look at myself, I'm an interrupter, and interruptions are not nice. They're not respectful, you know, and so I'm constantly working on that. And I think we all have qualities that we can improve, and that's really the intent of the book is this is not only about how to deal with difficult people, but it's also how to improve yourself.
Okay. Now, what advice would you give someone about making their work life more satisfying?
Well, it depends on what it is that's not satisfying. I mean, there's going to be a certain level of things that you can't do anything about, you know, cultural things that you can't change. But if it's things that are within your control, like improving relationships with people, like working at it, I just find sometimes people don't work at it. They just expect them to be good. And then when they're not, they're surprised. Things like that you can kind of take control of. You know, make sure you're, I mean, are you bored? Are you been doing something for too long? Do you need new challenges? So it really depends on the issue.
Well, I'm sure if you can improve your relationships with your coworkers and your boss, that's going to make your life more satisfying.
Oh, because people will stay in a job if they are bored or unchallenged but really love the people, and they'll leave much more quickly if they don't like the people but actually really like their job.
Great. Now, if you had to summarize the theme of your book in a sentence or two, what would you say?
I think the key thing is it's all about adapting to people and being willing to put the effort into doing that. It isn't about changing people because people, you know, truthfully just don't change. Just like IQ, pretty much by the time they're 2 years old, they've got that specific kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just help yourself adapt and get along so that you will be more successful at work, that's what this book is about.
Great. Now, do you have one last tip you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I think that the tip is the tip I always give to everybody, whether I coach or train. Look at yourself first. And this book makes it very easy for you to do that because in the every single key chapter, there's a lot of stuff that you can do to kind of say, am I one of those difficult people? Do I have trouble making decisions? And I think that's the most important thing is start there.
Well, thank you so much, Julie. I know our listeners are going to want to learn more, and I know they can get a copy of your new book, You Want Me to Work With Who, as well as your first book, I Don't Know What I Want, But I Know It's Not This, on our website, yourcareerdoctors.com. But now we have to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to your your career doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm your host, Barbara Jackson, and I'm here with our co-host, Lee Miller. Lee, it's always comforting to know that you aren't alone when you face those difficult characters at the office.
Yeah, we all have them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always at least one jerk in every office. Is that right?
Well, actually, there's probably more than one, but everyone may not perceive that one person or each of those people as jerks. For sure, there's the total and universal, really difficult person, but there are many more people who just can't and just make certain people's lives more difficult. And that's because each of us, and Julie said it, each of us has a different type of people we like to deal with and a whole type of person we don't. And the relationship is what's key. It's always a two-way street.
Right. So it's sort of like that favorite teacher. My best friend and I probably had two different favorite teachers based on how we liked to learn and how they taught. So the jerk factor is probably a personal, I mean, like you said, there's always a universal jerk that everybody hates. But beyond that, there's probably personal differences that make us get along better or worse with any individual in particular. I mean, forgetting people who are doing illegal things or just, you know.
The bad evil people.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've got
Mr. Evil, but the rest of the world, you know, there are some people, like in take influencing, there's some people who are basically competitive, and there are others that are more collaborative. And actually, there tends to be a correlation between gender and a collaborative influencing style, with you know, many more women tending to prefer a collaborative style, while many, many more men tend to have a more competitive style of interacting with their colleagues. And that's an uncomfortable mix because you got both men and women in the workplace. So if you don't know how to deal with people who have a different style than you do, you're going to find working with those people stressful and generally not as productive.
And if I understand the difference between what's important to a person who's collaborative versus what's important to a person who's competitive, it's not just how they approach different situations, it's what they want as an outcome. I've heard you say over and over again, Lee, that if I'm a collaborative person, I'm going to be first looking to balance the outcome, the final results, with the relationship and maintaining the relationship, whereas a competitive person is more likely to put the outcome first. I mean, they
right.
may not totally say, you know, forget it, I don't care if I'm ever your friend again, but they're really going to be looking more for the outcome that they want and
yeah.
less for the relationship.
Yeah, they tend to look at, well, let's get the outcome and I'll try to patch up the relationship later. Their focus really is on the result, and they worry about the relationship after the fact.
So if I have a person like that who says, you know, I'll patch up the relationship after, working with a person who's always looking to seek to balance, you know, what's good for you? Let me do that first, and then I'll take care of myself. So I'm looking to patch up my side of the balance. That's obviously really uncomfortable, and it can lead, I bet, to some really explosive situations.
Well, it's very uncomfortable for the collaborative person.
The competitive person
gets what
care.
He wants, and or she wants, and they don't really care so much. But it's very uncomfortable. The collaborative person, and that person has to learn how, because you're going to deal with those people in the workplace, how to deal effectively.
So what's
with
the game
someone.
Plan when you have to deal with these people?
Well, you know, first of all, you need to understand what I call their you perspective. What motivates them? You know, it isn't about dating. You don't have to love the people you're working with. You just need to work with them. You need to have a relationship with them, and you need to get the outcomes you need, whether it means, and outcomes are, you know, you might need resources, you might be needing to agree on a deadline to get a project done. There are lots of different outcomes, and they're not always about, you know, money. It's about working together. So you want to get the outcome you want, and, you know, if you're a collaborative person, you're going to care about the relationship, you're balancing those two, and you need to work with people who have a different style. So one of the ways is to understand, as I said, what motivates them, their you perspective, and once you do that, you're able to get them to really do what you want. And frankly, that's the goal, is to get them to do what you want, either through your relationship with them or through other techniques that you can use that will play on what motivates them.
And that's not really being manipulative or snaky or anything. It's just good business. In fact, I think we heard an example that really well illustrates this point at your workshop in New York last week on in our Powerful Tools for Successful Women seminar. We had a woman in that seminar who worked at the United Nations, And no surprise at what motivated her boss. Her boss was motivated by looking good. And so when the woman who was in our seminar wanted to get her boss to do what she needed, and generally her boss was not a risk taker and generally sort of didn't want to, even though she wanted to look good, she didn't want to take any risks getting there, what she would do to motivate her boss was she came to understand that her boss's view perspective was looking good. So she would go in and she would say, you know, if we do this action, whatever the action is that she wanted to do, she knew in her mind, because she had done the research, she knew it was a good action to take, but the research wasn't going to motivate her boss. So she would simply go in, if you'll recall the scenario she told, she said, I just stand up in front of her and I say, you know, I talked to this and this person in the following journals and periodicals, and they think that they could write a story about you if you did this. Or, you know, I know that so-and-so is interested in doing a story on this. So, you know, we would look really good if you could be the leader in this, and you've got such a great reputation. I wouldn't call it sucking up. It was just sort of using her buttons to push, to motivate her to get to. She could have gone in with data. She had the data, but that wasn't going to convince her boss to do anything.
Right, and that's the key. I mean, some people do feel that that's manipulative, but it's not. I mean, it's just like anything else. I mean, you know, different things motivate different people. I mean, for some people, we all think, well, it's okay. In the business, we'll save money. We'll give them a bonus. Well, that works for some people who are motivated by money, and certainly in the salesperson, you want them to be motivated by money, but it's not always going to be money that motivates people. Sometimes it's recognition, as with this person. Sometimes it's helping others. There are lots of different motivations, and when you're trying to get somebody to do something that's good and something that you want, you need to focus on what motivates them. And it's not always going to be what motivates you. That's why I call it the you perspective.
Right, and what was really interesting about this example and why I think it so specifically illustrates the jerk factor and the you perspective is that in her mind, this person who she worked for was a real jerk. I mean, she didn't value them because she thought that they were motivated by the wrong things because they weren't motivated by what motivated her. She thought that they were a little lazy, that they weren't willing to take risks. So she didn't have a lot of admiration for this person who was her boss. She thought they were a jerk because she couldn't really rely on them to always do the right thing. She could only rely on them to do what was going to make them look good. But on the other hand, she had overcome her feeling of jerkness about this person to learn how to motivate them, to learn how to move the ball forward so that she could successfully work with them. And she's probably never going to have her boss for dinner, but she's going to have a great career with her boss because she makes her boss look good, so her boss highly values her.
And from her you perspective, which is in part getting good results and doing good and helping other people, she's doing those things. And if she tried to persuade her boss by showing what great things she was doing, her boss wouldn't be interested. So there's nothing wrong. As a matter of fact, that is the best way to influence people in terms of what they care about.
And it also, I think, illustrates your point that, you know, you're not going to change the people who are jerks. You're not going to change the people you work for. So you need to find a way to change your expectations. And I think our colleague at the workshop was able to do that by saying, you know what, she's a jerk, but I can get what I need from her by taking the following actions.
And that's really what the you perspective is all about. Once you understand what motivates people, it's actually not that difficult to get them to do the right thing or the thing that you really need them to do.
So I'm guessing that this week, in addition to Julie's book, we probably have a special.
That's right. We're offering actually my interactive CD, Managing Difficult Employees. That's regularly $149. And this week, for our listeners, if you go to our website, you will be able to get that for $79.
Right, and you get that by going to the Your Career Doctors. So www.yourcareerdoctors.com if you want it for $79, because if you go to any other website, you're going to pay $149 for it. And even though you may not be managing difficult people, if you watch the Managing Difficult People tape, you'll be able to sort of think of it on the flip side of how to manage up as well as how to manage down. And that does come with the Macau 100% satisfaction back guarantee. And Lee, do you have a career doctor's prescription for us this week?
As usual, I do. There's usually a reason why difficult people behave the way they do. Understanding that motivation will allow you to harness it to get them to do what you need them to do.
Well, that's a great tip. This has been your career doctors, Barbara Jackson and Lee Miller at Grapevine Radio. Thanks for listening. And remember, it's your life, your career, and your choice.